This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Good afternoon and welcome in to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight, big voice guy, said all that already, but now you know it for real. You can celebrate 125 years of White Sox baseball and lock in a 2025 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups, exciting new promotions, and opening day on Thursday, March 27th. Plus, you get access to the best seats at the best value, flexible payment plans, savings on single games, and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2025. Well, the White Sox are making moves. We got a bunch of headlines, some new additions to the White Sox roster, in rumor still, and done deal, ink signed, and I suppose probably dried. A couple of additions we got to talk about here on White Sox Weekly this afternoon. Lots to get to. Some additions to the Sox Fest Live lineup that we'll get to in just a little bit. And one of my favorite times of the year, I love the folks over at MLB Pipeline. They do a great job of not only ranking and scouting prospects, but also, and not to say that other outlets don't do this, but also kind of rating and reviewing based on or through the lens of other executives throughout the league. They've got the executive poll out there now, all sorts of different stuff on the systems throughout Major League Baseball. And the White Sox are featured fairly prominently in a lot of different answers as the guys over at MLB Pipeline polled executives throughout baseball on things such as the best system in all the game and the best fastball and the best hit tool and all that other kind of stuff. And we'll get to that a little bit later on in the show. But some headlines for sure. The White Sox may well have an opening day starter. Martin Perez has been signed technically to a two-year deal. We'll get to how he folds into the White Sox rotation to start the show. A move was made. We talked last week about the White Sox signing Josh Rojas to a one-year contract. That has gotten done. When we talked last week, it was still yet to be announced by the White Sox officially, which means that because the White Sox 40-man is full, the 40-man roster is full, signing Rojas to a major league deal meant that they were going to have to let go somebody from that 40-man roster. I speculated on the broadcast last week that it might be a guy like Jesse Schultens or perhaps even a guy like Oscar Colas. I was wrong. Usually am. Jacob Amaya, an infielder the White Sox picked up last year, who filled in ably defensively at short last season, was the guy designated for assignment. And we'll talk about the shortstop situation for the White Sox from a couple of different aspects in the show this afternoon as well. Bobby Dalbec, a former top 100 prospect of the Boston Red Sox, now turned 30, has signed on a minor league deal. He's mostly a first baseman, but he's been adding a few other defensive spots to his resume as well. We'll get to all of that throughout the show. Couple of notes here. Some I don't know, what would you call it? Housekeeping kind of things? Housekeeping makes it sound dull. Mark Burley is anything but housekeeping. Got the email on, what was this, Thursday, I think? World Series champion and five-time All-Star Mark Burley is among the additional White Sox players and greats scheduled to attend Sox Fest Live at Romova. That's January 24th and 25th. Really looking forward to seeing everybody there. It's been a long time since we've had a Sox Fest, and you can count me as one of the very excited to attend. The lineup includes now Mark Burley. He's going to be there on Friday at the Romova Theater for Sox Fest Live, presented by Rate, Beggar's Pizza, Blue Moon, and Wintrust Financial Corporation. He'll be joined by other members of that 2005 World Series pitching staff, Jose Contreras and Freddy Garcia. Awesome to see them there. That'll be great. Freddy Garcia is a favorite for sure. Not that Jose Contreras isn't, but I covered Freddy a little bit in his second stint with the White Sox later on. Additional guests scheduled to appear at Sox Fest Live: Hall of Famer Harold Baines, current White Sox players Brooks Baldwin, Mike Tauchman, Gus Varland. I'll be there, though I'm sure that's not at the top of your card, but I'm excited to see you. Len's going to be there. he's much closer to the top of your card, probably in that Mike Tauchman, Gus Varland range. And we're really looking forward to bringing you all the content from Sox Fest Live coming up on January 24th and 25th. You can still get tickets. They're on sale now through eTix on the Rimowa Theater website. Just go to RimowaChicago.com. That's RAMOVA, Rimowa Chicago. I trust you know how to spell Chicago. RimowaChicago.com. More information about Sox Fest Live, go to WhiteSox.com/SoxFestLive. All right, so that's the fun stuff with Mark Burley. No doubt about it. Looking forward to seeing him at Sox Fest Live. Let's get to Martin Perez. He signs what is effectively a two-year deal, but in actuality, more like a one-year deal. Here's the conversation around it. Here's the idea behind it. And this is yet to be announced by the team. So just like the Josh Rojas signing that we talked about last week, in order to get Perez on the roster, they will have to make a 40-man move. And I'll continue to speculate that it'll be pitcher for pitcher like it was position player for position player in the last move with Josh Rojas for Jacob Amaya. It could be Jesse Schultens. It could be Oscar Colas. It could be something we're not thinking of at this point, too. But Martin Perez has been around for a little bit. Had an all-star season in 2022 with the Texas Rangers. He was absolutely superb. Best year by far. A .289 earned run average and an ERA plus of 137. High marks in both of those categories throughout his career. He broke in 2012 with the Rangers. Stayed there until 2018. Then with the Twins. Then with Boston for a couple of years, then with Texas again for two seasons, signed with the Pirates last year, had a dismal first half of the season, and then was one of the pitchers nabbed by the Padres right about the trade deadline as they were going through all kinds of injuries in their starting rotation. They were just looking for anybody to take innings, and Perez did a pretty good job, made 10 starts, 52 total innings, a .346 earned run average, and a .119 ERA plus. Much better results than he had in the first half with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Now, some of the peripheries look a little bit weird on Martin Perez. Always have. He's a ground ball guy when he's right. Doesn't miss a ton of bats, but does keep it off the barrel when he's going well. I think it's pretty clear what the White Sox see in Martin Perez as it regards what he can bring to the rotation. It's innings, right? 196 innings in 2022, 141 and two-thirds in 2023, and then split across two teams last season, 135 innings. Not a ton of strikeouts. Like I said, he's going to be around the zone, doesn't walk too many when things are going right as well, though that walk rate has ticked up over the last couple of seasons. He'll pound the strike zone. He knows how to nibble a little bit to his advantage. I've seen Martin Perez, I think I've called a Martin Perez game when he's been really on in 2022. And, you know, as a guy who knows how to get it done, a left-hander with some tricks in his bag, he can be really good. I think what's also interesting here, and we've talked about this quite a bit from a youth perspective for the White Sox, when they got Bryce Wilson from the Brewers, a guy that may be a starter, may be a reliever, may kind of have a combo role a little bit, a swing guy in that rotation. What the White Sox need here in that starting pitching mix is insulation, our innings, right? And you don't want, one of the things you can't have coming into 2025 is a whole bunch of open spots or open dates on your calendar where you're filling in with rookies where you need them to perform and give you innings, right? And not expose the rest of your pitching staff, I'm thinking mostly of the relievers, to more work than they can bear. That can really submarine a season, a rebuilding season, faster than you'd think. What begins to happen there is fatigue that starts maybe more than you want. A shuttle in and out of the major and minor leagues for a lot of relievers to get them some rest, to get them a blow and just kind of understand like, hey, you got to cool it down a little bit. You're not going to be used quite as much in Charlotte for the next week and a half, 2 weeks, 3 weeks or so. We'll ramp you back up some. All in-game action, right? I'm not talking about playing games or anything with an injured list placement or anything like that. Just kind of the reality of how teams use their 40-man roster now in terms of the bullpen guys that are available to them. You look at how the Rays do this. You look at how the Dodgers do this. It's over and over and over and constant. It is a system that they've got, really. What Perez allows is a guy who can take the ball every fifth day, a guy who understands how to make 25, 30-something starts. Yeah, there have been injuries in his past, you know, some hamstrings here or there. I think a shoulder issue a few years ago, fairly minor as it regards shoulder issues. But, you know, stuff that has gone on, no doubt about it. But the idea here, too, is not just getting a starter who can be kind of that veteran presence and reliable innings source for Will Venable and Ethan Katz and the rest of the White Sox coaching staff, but also a flip candidate. I mean, what's true about Martin Perez is that he's been wanted by a lot of different teams since going free agent in 2018. He's gone to free agency. I think it's, I mean, check down to the, yeah, the transaction page on Baseball Reference. It's seven different times he's gone free agent, and he's been picked up by a team every time. He is a, you know, reliable deadline pickup that's not going to probably net you a whole lot in return, but it's a guy that's very clearly able to make adjustments when healthy, and he has been recently, and figure out what he needs to do to get batters out. He's not flashy. He's not exactly overpowering, but from the left side, he's a guy that can get things done at a reliable level. So Martin Perez reportedly added by the White Sox. Now, here's the contractual obligation, too. I think we got started on this and then got kind of derailed a little bit by talking some about the what Perez could do. It's a one-year deal for $3.5 million in 2025. There is a buyout after that first season for $1.5 million. So the White Sox are, you know, more or less committed to five, right? $3.5 million and $1.5 million. Yeah, that's still five. And then in year two, it's a mutual option for $10 million. And it doesn't take a genius to kind of outlay what that would have to look like for the White Sox to be in control of both of those years, right? Things would have to go really well in the second half of year one. Maybe if he's hurt in the first half and then pitches well in the second half of the deadline, the Sox are unable to move him and still looking like a solid option. $10 million is not a high price to pay for a mid-rotation type guy that can still be trade deadline stuff in 2026 with Martin Perez. He is going to pitch in 2025 in his age 34 season. He turns 34 on April 4th, so just after opening day. There's value there. What's more likely going to be the case is that Perez is going to be out there on the market come deadline time, and hopefully picked up by a contender for his sake and for the White Sox sake, because that's what additions are for the Sox at this point in their rebuild cycle. You know, I had up to, you know, the other day when Perez had been rumored to be signed by the White Sox, and indeed, according to reports, it's going to happen, yet to be announced by the team, I had figured Jonathan Cannon for the opening day start. There's pitchability there. It's a guy who darn near had his first career complete game in the big leagues last year. He pitched really well at times, and mostly because of fatigue issues late, got hit around in some starts. Now, there absolutely were a couple of starts here or there where Jonathan Cannon got tagged because he was in the middle of the strike zone much more than he wanted to be. But I kind of look back at 2024 for Jonathan Cannon specifically and go, I'm glad he learned those lessons then. I there's a success, an unqualified success for that guy in that season of White Sox baseball. He learned what it is to try and pound the strike zone. He learned where you can't do that against particular pitchers. And he's shown so much ability to kind of pitch with different stuff, alter the mix a little bit for righties and lefties, a little bit like Eric Fetty did in the first half of last season, and figure out how to still be on the attack despite changing his mix a little bit, whether it's in starts or in between starts. And those are valuable lessons. You know, those are things that you can take into 2025 and really grow with. It's, in some way or another, momentum. But all those things aside, I don't mind one bit handing, and I'm speculating at this point, nothing's been announced, of course. The guy's not even on the roster yet, but I have no problem handing opening day to a veteran like Martin Perez and leaving a little bit of carrot out there for canon, whether it's in spring training to try and take that honor back, or for whoever is in this rotation that may well be angling for an opening day start. I'm picking Cannon because that's who I had decided was probably going to be there. I'm not saying the White Sox have made that known one way or the other. It's just, you know, kind of a stand-in for anybody else looking to make that first start of the year in 2025, which is coming up sooner than you think. More moves for the White Sox. A couple of others added to this roster. We'll talk about what it means in the depth chart. And I want to talk about shortstop a little bit, because by adding Josh Rojas to a major league deal, the White Sox have, it seems, depleted a little bit of depth on the defensive side at short. So does that mean that Colson Montgomery has an inside track to the opening day roster? We'll see. Lots more to do here on White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. 1000.
Welcome back into White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight. Sox fans, enter the Sox Fest sweepstakes for your chance to win two tickets to Sox Fest Live at Rimowa, presented by Rate, Beggar's Pizza, Blue Moon, and Wintrust Financial Corporation. Celebrate the start of the season alongside current and former White Sox players like Mark Burley and coaches with live music, entertainment, and more. To enter, visit whitesox.com/SoxFestSweeps. That's whitesox.com/SoxFestSweeps. Told you we had a little bit more news to get to here after the reported signing of Martin Perez. The Sox were not done, or are not done, still might not be done, adding to the roster. They have tried to snap up a lot of different fringe guys, fringe MLB guys, guys who have seen some time, guys with former prospect shine, all that kind of stuff. And we'll get to the newest one, Bobby Dalbec, in just a moment here. But the White Sox did agree to terms with four of their outstanding arbitration players. You've been seeing some headlines, I would imagine, about guys going back and forth between their current team, if that team traded for them perhaps, and their and the player's agent, you know, asking for a certain amount of money and maybe coming up just a little bit short in negotiations, so they're probably going to go to arbitration. I'm not saying this is about any one particular player or one particular team, just that this happens more often than not. I'm not going to get into a big conversation about, you know, arbitration or, you know, file and trial or any of this sort of stuff. We can get into that in a later show if you're really interested in it. But the White Sox had four arbitration-eligible players: right-hander Justin Anderson, right-hander Penn Murphy, infielder Andrew Vaughn, and right-hander Stephen Wilson. Three relievers, one infielder, and they agreed to terms with each and every one of them. I don't know that it's all that interesting to, you know, get into the individual numbers for each guy, but I know a lot of people have been looking at what the arbitration number, the salary, was going to be for Andrew Vaughn. That comes out to $5.85 million. MLB Trade Rumors, who does a really good job estimating the arbitration numbers for players throughout baseball, had Vaughn at 6.3, and he comes in at 5.85. So I don't know if you're doing your off-season math or calculating or putting it into a spreadsheet or whatever. There it is, 5.85. Now, Vaughn's a piece of conversation here, or of particular interest, I guess, in that the White Sox have reportedly agreed to a minor league deal with infielder Bobby Dalbec. Dalbec's a former top prospect for the Boston Red Sox. Get into his background in just a little bit here. I've called a game or two of his. He has an extreme amount of power. He has an extreme amount of swing and miss in his game. Dalbec, according to reports from Chris Cotillo, I think, of Mass Live. Well, it's definitely Chris Cotillo, and I believe it's of Mass Live, wrote out that Dalbec will make $1.25 million if he makes the majors, with $500,000 of incentives available to him as well. And as is usual for a guy signing a minor league deal like this, who's got a fair amount of major league experience, regardless of the production level, there's an opt-out in this contract, according to Cotillo as well. There's an opt-out in June or in July if Dalbec is not on the major league roster at that point. Dalbec will be 30 by June, so the days of his prospect shine are, you know, fairly behind him. But, you know, worth noting, and I'll tell you why in a second here, but let's go back through the background. Dalbec was a 2016 draft pick of the Boston Red Sox. And in 2017, he was the fifth-ranked prospect in that Boston system. Andrew Benintendi and Rafael Devers were 1 and 2. 2018, he bounces down to 12. 2019, the third-ranked prospect in the system. Same for 2020. He makes his debut in the pandemic-shortened season of 2020. His best major league stuff by far. 2021, still kept prospect eligibility and was still third on the list. Number 92 on the top 100. I was just going through that top 100 because I was trying to remind myself. Dane Dunning, then of the White Sox, and George Kirby were the two prospects ranked 90 and 91 above Dahlbeck. Kirby's obviously a very good starter now. Dunning's had some good seasons, too, with the Rangers. And he was ranked above Brett Beatty of the Mets. I think it's worth noting the prospect shine, right? For a couple of different reasons. One, let's get to the most interesting one, right? The bet on the future kind of idea. Ryan Fuller is the new director of hitting for the White Sox. And Chris Getz and the rest of the front office have tried to reimagine their approach to reinvigorating hitters in a similar way that they have to bringing Brian Bannister in to work with Ethan Katz and the rest of the White Sox pitching development system to reinvigorate pitchers. The idea here is simple, though it is difficult. The idea is to find guys who had that kind of thing, right? That kind of shine on the hitting side. On the pitching side, it's a little bit more like find guys with that stuff, that velocity, that one weird trick. You know, whatever it is that makes you a marketable thing. It's easier on the pitching side than it is on the hitting side. We talked about that a lot on the episode where we talked about the hiring of Ryan Fuller. You can go back on ESPN, the ESPN Chicago app, and download that show if you're interested. But it's a much easier prospect when you're talking about pitchers than it is hitters. But it's not undoable. It's not an impossible thing. You think about Ryan O'Hearn, former, you know, corner infielder, pinch hitter, utility player, I guess, with the Kansas City Royals, who goes over to the Baltimore Orioles, starts working with Ryan Fuller, and becomes, you know, much more than a valued piece at times. He was, you know, when that offense got a little stolid, in the second half of the season for the Orioles, O'Hearn was the guy moving things along as good as anybody, despite all of the other talent that was around him. Dahlbeck has the issue with the strikeout. I mean, it is an ungodly strikeout percentage for him in his, what is it, five seasons of Major League Baseball. It's a 36.8% strikeout percentage. In 2022, where he saw his last, you know, most amount of time in the bigs, 353 plate appearances, the strikeout rate was 33.4%. Last year, albeit in 93 major league plate appearances, he struck out 46.2% of the time. There's power there. Don't get me wrong. I mentioned that earlier. He had 25 home runs in 2021, but was unable to follow that up with a whole lot more. Dahlbeck, in an effort to get himself, you know, or to keep in the mix with the Red Sox for the last couple of years, has added some positional flexibility to the roster. He plays first base, has played a little bit of third, and has played some corner outfield, mostly right. He's also, you know, moonlit at short, I guess, a couple of times here or there. Dahlbeck is, 6'4", 225 pounds, so definitely more of the Alex Rodriguez, Corey Seager build over at short. Big fella. I don't know if A-Rod went 6'4", though, and I'm not comping the guys one way or the other. Dahlbeck is, you know, pretty much always slugged in the minor leagues. He has tore up whatever minor league competition, slugging percentage-wise, that he's faced. Last year, in 97 games at Worcester, that's the AAA affiliate for the Boston Red Sox, he hit .252 with a .337 on base and a .479 slugging percentage. And I think I mentioned already that Dahlbeck bats right. So I don't think this is a situation where he's a potential platoon mate for Andrew Vaughn, obviously. I do think that it's been clear for a while now that the White Sox are looking for more from Andrew Vaughn and are looking for it in such a way that they are unafraid to add some competition, whatever, you know, quality of competition that is, you know, we'll see in spring training, I suppose. But there's competition there at first base for him. I kind of expected a move like this, maybe at first or not necessarily at first. But once Dahlbeck's name popped out there, I thought, you know what? There's enough there. There's enough potential there, especially with the slugging percentage, for the White Sox to make a move here. And when we talked earlier a few minutes ago about how this is, you know, kind of a home rehab, right? A renovation for a player is a bit easier on the pitching side than it is the hitting side. I suppose the thing I'd look for is slugging percentage, is that kind of power. Those are the kinds of things. That particular skill set is difficult to find at the trade deadline. And if, and I don't think this should be a referendum on Ryan Fuller, the hitting director for the White Sox, and what he's able to do, what his capabilities are in his new role. But if they're able to turn things around for Dahlbeck to a point where he's cut that strikeout rate down to something much, much closer to league average and is pounding the baseball a little bit, even if he's hitting 220 with a lot of pop and has, you know, that kind of ability to play a couple of different positions, that could be interesting to somebody. We'll see. But that is, I suppose, the upshot of the White Sox signing Bobby Dahlbeck to a minor league deal. Now, on the other side of things, it's entirely possible that he doesn't make the big league roster and gets to June or July when his opt-outs come around in that contract and says, no, thank you. I'll try my luck somewhere else. We shall see. One of the things, though, you know, as we look at this kind of the infield depth chart, something we looked at pretty hardcore on an episode a week or two ago, it's changed even yet again with the addition of Josh Rojas. Braden Shumake was let go from the roster a couple of weeks ago. He's been picked up by the Kansas City Royals. We saw him a little bit at the beginning of the season, but he could not figure out his own stuff over at short. Defensively and hitting was a tough thing for Shumake as well. Good guy. I liked him. I hope he clicks with the Royals. Maybe not in the 13 divisional games against the White Sox. But that said, the White Sox at shortstop are a little bit, oh, I hate that I'm going to do this, they're a little bit short. Defensively, things look a bit different now than they did just a week and a half ago, right? Jake Amaya, though, you know, there's not much there. There hadn't been much there with the bat. Jake Amaya definitely did offer you a quality shortstop option. And I think one of the things that we've been talking about all offseason long is where the White Sox can add to the roster while adding two things. One, and in some cases, some players, you've added both, but at least one in every signing, or every signing you could think of, or try and make. One, you provide some insulation for the top prospects, right? A guy that can be there on opening day, give you reliable defense, a reasonable at-bat, and keep that prospect, whether it's Colson Montgomery or anybody else, at AAA, working and playing, most importantly, playing every day. I'm not talking, though it certainly happens, I'm not talking about service time manipulation. I'm not, you know, Pollyanna here whistling past the woods. That happens, and it could be real, and it could be something the White Sox have to talk about in 2025. We'll see. But there is absolutely a benefit. Like, you want guys, you want your prospects to play every day, and there's no reason to bring them up to the bigs if they're not going to ready to play every day from a defensive standpoint. So, in that way, Jacob Amaya might have been able to serve that purpose. Now, the White Sox do have Brooks Baldwin, who, according to Fangraphs roster resource, is slated as the starting shortstop. And I'd be fine with Brooks Baldwin over at short every now and again to start the season. But to me, this continues to signal in, you know, not necessarily like serious ways, but definitely worthwhile signals to look at, that the White Sox are more and more comfortable as this winter goes on with Colson Montgomery beginning at shortstop on opening day. And that's, you know, it's exciting. It's wild. It's a little nerve-wracking. It's all the things, right? And that should be the way it is, or at least it's understandable that that's the way it is with any top prospect in your organization, especially given the fact that Colson over the last 18 months hasn't played the way he wanted to play for the most part. It hasn't been exactly a smooth ride for him. Now, the production, you know, the barrel to the bat in the Arizona Fall League, the last bit of meaningful baseball that he played here in the 2024 calendar was terrific. The pitching there was abysmal. You talk to a lot of people who scouted the Arizona Fall League this year, and they'll tell you, the pitching this year in the AFL was as bad as any other year, most any other year in their memory. And there's nothing, like, I'm not taking a shot at Montgomery for that. He doesn't get to pick the pitchers who go down to the Arizona Fall League and decide the rosters. But you got to hit the guys you're facing. And man, did he hit the guys he faced. Anyway, what you don't have is kind of that veteran shortstop that provides insulation for Colson Montgomery if spring doesn't go the way everybody wants. And I wouldn't be all that surprised if there's one more signing on the infield for the White Sox that provides some of that. You know, Josh Rojas has played short in the past, but he's not been good over there. And I think that matters some, especially when you're looking at a team that's, again, trying to reinvent itself defensively. I mentioned Brooks Baldwin as a potential over there at shortstop. And, you know, there are some other depth guys that can spell you over there at short one way or another. Or take some innings, some starts, and what have you, and, you know, make it look good. But it's not like any of the White Sox top prospects outside of Colson Montgomery, or I shouldn't even say top prospects, you know, other guys who are close to major league ready, like Brian Ramos, Miguel Vargas, who's got to be on the roster, Chase Meidroth, you know, yes, has played short, but that's not his calling card. Like, it's Colson's. The runway is there until the White Sox make it not so. And I feel like those, you know, the roster moves over the last few weeks have certainly signaled that one way or the other. From that kind of prospect conversation to a bit of a different kind when we come back, MLB Pipeline has put up their executive poll. They've talked to folks in the industry about all sorts of different things, like the best farm system in baseball, the top prospects, the potentials for rookie of the year, all that stuff. And a few White Sox are mentioned fairly prominently in this list. It's a fun one. I like going through it every year, and we will do that when we come back on White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000.
White Sox Weekly with Connor McKnight.
On the home of the White Sox.
ESPN Chicago, Chicago's home for sports. This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight. Celebrate your special occasion in 2025 with the White Sox party area. Reserve your group outing today to get access to the top matchups and best spaces. For more information and to secure your group outing, visit whitesox.com/groups. Got a lot of minor league stuff to get to today on MLB Pipeline. The fine folks over there had their released their executive poll over the last week or so, all kinds of different categories, and we won't get to all of them, but I wanted to touch on the ones in which the White Sox featured pretty prominently, and there were a bunch. We'll get to that in just a second. I want to get back to the Bobby Dalbec thing real quickly here, because there's a podcast I absolutely love. It's the FanGraph podcast called Effectively Wild. It's with Ben Lindbergh and Meg Rowley, and if you listen to White Sox Weekly a lot, you're probably saying something like, oh my God, I can't believe you're mentioning this podcast yet again. It's one of my absolute favorites. Ben and Meg are great, great, great baseball minds, and it's fun to listen to. On their last episode, and I haven't got through the whole thing yet, full disclosure, but on their last episode, they did something they've been doing for like a decade, and that's the minor league free agent draft. This is where the hosts of the podcast and Ben Clemens, who writes up all kinds of stuff on Fangraphs.com, joins the show, and they draft players who have signed minor league deals in terms and try to accumulate the best draft in terms of major league playing time received, right? So you draft a guy who signed a minor league deal. If he gets more plate appearances or more batters faced, if you're going with a pitcher, then the rest of the guys that you're drafting against, girls that you're drafting against, you win the minor league free agent draft. It's a ridiculous exercise, absolutely preposterous, but it's fun. And every now and again, you get some nuggets out of this. And in the very first pick of that minor league free agent draft, Ben Clemens of Fangraphs took Bobby Dalbec. Does it mean anything? No, not well. Yes, it means one thing very specifically. It means from the outside looking in, right, that there are a number of, or at least one smart baseball guy, Ben and Meg on the podcast too, so you kind of said, oh, that's a great pick, great pick, great pick. There's potential for Bobby Dalbec to get there with the White Sox this year, for a bunch of different reasons, and hopefully it's because Dalbec mashes and fixes his strikeout issues and all that other kind of stuff. But the White Sox are a destination for minor league free agents to come right now. And while that's tough, because you'd rather be, you know, signing guys to big-time contracts, we're going to help you win World Series and all that other stuff, this is where things are right now. And I like the idea of, you know, kind of the industry looking around and going, That signing could work out for both player and team. That signing could work. You have to cash in on one or two of these, you know, kind of diamond in the rough sort of ideas. One or two of these take a flyer on a guy scenarios during this window of a rebuild. Last year, this year, and hopefully that's it, right? And the idea is last season, the White Sox cashed in on either one of the players in the three-way deal that sent Kopech to the Dodgers and sent Fetty to the Cardinals, or on the Garrett Crochet trade. And granted, those are, you know, bigger name moves, right? Those are the things you needed to win, and we'll see if the White Sox did or did not. But you also need some of these other, you know, kind of marginal moves to make and complete the rebuild, to build out some of that depth and get you better. And who knows, maybe the Bobby Dalbec thing turns into something where you're not that Bobby Dalbec provides something for the next White Sox winner, but that he provides something to another team that is winning in 2025, and the White Sox get something they can use in the future. That's the idea, right? Anyway, over to MLB pipeline stuff. Now, this is really good stuff, and I like going through these kind of polls every year. I worked with Dan on the other side of things for a little while, and he always loved going through this the NBA executive poll. And it's funny, you talk to him, and he's got a lot of you know, time spent in basketball circles in his prior jobs, and you know, you get the real unvarnished stuff when you talk to executives in this way, because they want it out there, what they think about the industry, with a certain bit of anonymity, so that they can kind of level set for everybody else. And, you know, who's to say that this is exactly what's happening in this player poll here? But I think taken with that particular grain of salt, we can kind of learn some things about it. So MLB Pipeline asked a bunch of different questions to a bunch of executives throughout Major League Baseball and got all kinds of results. And one of the big ones, obviously, and this is like best picture kind of thing, who's got the best farm system in Major League Baseball? Well, the Red Sox resoundingly got the top spot in terms of voting, followed by the Tampa Bay Rays, the Detroit Tigers, and then the White Sox. The White Sox got 10% of the votes for best farm system in all of baseball. The Dodgers, Cubs, Nationals, Guardians, and Mariners rounded out the rest of the rest of big votes. And in that same poll from executives, and you know why the White Sox are up there in terms of best farm system. The trade for Garrett Crochet brought back some, you know, top tier talent. There was already a lot of really interesting pitching, which we'll talk about here. In this poll, that came up in this poll later on. But the White Sox are in a rebuild, and they've traded away some very talented players. They should be ranked toward the top of things in terms of overall farm systems. We'll see what this year's trading deadline and this year's upcoming draft does in terms of what the White Sox are able to bring to bear in a farm system. But you know, listen, the way that Mike Shirley has been drafting here for the White Sox over the last 3-4 years, you're going to hear a lot of these names, a lot of his draft picks, or picks that he's recommended is probably how Shirley had said, in these lists, and that matters. Executives are also polled on who's going to win AL and NL Rookie of the Year. Roman Anthony of the Red Sox. It makes sense, right? The Red Sox were voted as the best farm system. It's likely that they're going to have the Rookie of the Year in Roman Anthony. He was one of the untouchables, thought by many, in the conversations the White Sox had with the Red Sox about Garrett Crochet. Anyway, Roman Anthony of the Red Sox, Jackson Jobe of the Tigers, the top two vote getters. Jason Dominguez of the Yankees finished in third. But Kyle Teal got a few votes for American League Rookie of the Year. He was in the also mentioned, you know, kind of the college football top 25. And then you get also receiving votes. They're not ranked, but they got votes. And Kyle Teal's one of those guys. And I thought that was interesting. We're looking at a similar situation whereby, is there playing time at catcher for the White Sox in 2025? Oh, you bet there is. There is playing time to be had, and Kyle Teal's thought by many to be a really advanced prospect. In the National League, Dylan Cruz of the Nationals, the runaway winner in the National League. Matt Shaw of the Cubs, out of Maryland, was the runner-up. Cruz is really, really good. He was fun to watch make his debut last year. There was a carve-out, though, for Roki Sasaki in this polling question, and I'm glad they did this. It was a completely separate question, and that is, will Roki Sasaki, who who's going to sign a minor league deal through international signing rules and all that good stuff. He will be a rookie this year and will almost assuredly headline the rotation to which he signs. If not be one, then 1A perhaps, or if he goes to the Dodgers, he'll be like 1C or however that works. Anyway, the question was, will Roky Sasaki be a favorite to win Rookie of the Year in whatever league he signs in? And 79% of voters said yes. 79% of executives polled said yes. Roky Sasaki would be the favorite to win Rookie of the Year, regardless of whether he lands in the American League or National League. Top prospect in all of baseball went to Roman Anthony. Noah Schultz, though, the big, tall, the enormously tall White Sox left-handed pitcher, did get votes, and that's interesting. Schultz got 10% of the vote for best pitching prospect in baseball. The leader in that vote was Jackson Jobe of the Tigers. We saw him make his debut late last year and in the playoffs some as well. Chase Burns of the Reds was the runner-up in best pitching prospect. Burns was the first pitcher off the board in last year's draft. He went second to the Cincinnati Reds. Hagen Smith went five. He was the second pitcher taken. Of course, he went to the White Sox. I like this category too, breakout prospect. Now, there's some flimsiness in the term breakout. What does that exactly mean? Well, that's kind of up to the voter. Zaire Hope of the Dodgers won the voting there. Jack Caglione of the Royals, sixth overall in last year's draft, was the runner-up. News out yesterday, actually, Caglione is going to get an invite to MLB spring training. That's fun for him and for the Royals. Caglione went one pick after the White Sox took Hagen Smith. The White Sox, though, did get some votes here for breakout prospect. Colson Montgomery and right-hander Grant Taylor were named as potential breakout prospects. Best tools is always a fun one. Best hit tool overall went to Walker Jenkins, which is just a great baseball name, and Jacob Wilson. Jenkins in the Twins organization. Wilson, we saw a debut with the A's last year. He faced the White Sox. White Sox infielder Chase Mydroth got votes here as well for best hit tool, and that's why many, including myself, figure him to break camp with the team, although signing Josh Rojas makes that a more difficult task now than before. Best fastball in all the minor leagues went to Phillies starter Andrew Painter, now back from Tommy John. Chase Burns of the Reds, again featuring here as runner-up. Hagen Smith got votes for his heater. And this I really like. They did best secondary pitch. I like grouping them as for prospects. Anyway, I feel like it implies that they have a good primary pitch as well as a good secondary pitch. One has to work off the other. It's entirely possible I'm reading too much into that, but I like it. Jackson Jobe of the Tigers, a nasty slider. He won the voting. Chase Burns, a good slider, was second. Noah Schultz and his slider was third. Hagen Smith got votes here as well for best secondary pitch. It doesn't say for what. I'm guessing the slider. It's really good. But he essentially has two sliders, one more of a cutter, one a big-time slider. He's talked to me about his changeup some, and he's very excited about that and it growing. Other people have really liked his splitter when it's on. It's almost assuredly the slider, but I figured we'd mention all of his pitch offerings since he is a top White Sox prospect. That's where the White Sox featured most prominently in that voting on MLB Pipeline. You can go check it out on the website. I highly recommend it. It's a good, fun read. We'll wrap up White Sox Weekly when we come back on ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
White Sox Weekly.
On Chicago's home for sports.
On the ESPN Chicago app. 100.3 HD2 and ESPN 1000. We are talking White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you missed the show, we put the podcast up on the ESPN Chicago app. So listen on your time.
White Sox Weekly. ESPN Chicago. Chicago's home for sports.
Closing it up here on White Sox Weekly. Sox fans, sign up to become a White Sox insider for updates on the 125-year anniversary celebration next season. Get all the latest updates on games, promos, breaking team news, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. Big thanks to Jack McGrath, our producer on the other side, for his fine work this afternoon. Thanks so much for listening. Before we get out of here, I just wanted to talk a little Hall of Fame real quick. Ryan Thibodeau does a great job at Not Mr. Tibbs on Twitter and the Blue Sky, I think, of tracking all the Hall of Fame ballots coming in here. And I've seen it written in a bunch of different places. Some of the Big Feet writers on The Athletic have talked about how Felix Hernandez is not going to get their Hall of Fame vote this year, which Felix Hernandez should be a Hall of Famer. He'll get in there eventually, I hope, I pray. I look at Felix as a guy, you know, starter for the Mariners, never pitched in the postseason, but, you know, won a Cy Young in a season where the wins weren't there for him. And I
he was kind of the guy through the wall, the first guy through, where I think loudly we got to announce that pitching wins, starting pitching wins, do not matter in the way that they used to matter. It's just not the same game. And in speaking of that, because there weren't a whole lot of additions to the ballot in this year, surefire Hall of Famers, I should say, pretty much just CC Sabathia and Ichiro Suzuki being the surefire guys. Billy Wagner's on his 10th try. Troy Tulowitzki's on his first run. Ben Zobrist on his first run. Brian McCann, Dustin Pedroia, Hanley Ramirez. I mean, these aren't guys that are surefire Hall of Famers at all. Felix Hernandez, I think, is a Hall of Famer. However, it's going to take some time to get in there. Anyway, Mark Burley is trending up from where he was in seasons past of Hall of Fame voting. It looks like he's absolutely going to stay on the ballot. He's got something like 15% of the vote right now, 15% of votes, and that's going to keep him on the ballot. I think back many, many years ago to a conversation that Ozzie Guillen had with reporters about how the pitcher has changed and Mark Burley's going to make the Hall of Fame because look at what he does in terms of innings pitched. And here's hoping that Ozzie was right and that Mark Burley gets to celebrate one day. It's going to take some time, but here's hoping, and votes are trending up. Good way to end it as any here on White Sox Weekly. Burley's going to be at Sox Fest. We'll see you there, too. Back for more White Sox Weekly next week on ESPN.